Right, what I'd like to do is continue with this notion of the Trinity as a framework for engaging our world, and try and take it a bit further into what I call a magical, mystical way of engaging the world. And I'd like to beg your indulgence to hang in there with me where we get a little weird around this, because I think you'll find out that it'll lead to something wonderful. So the question is, how can we engage the world? And when we're gathered together to explore the question, how can we engage our world as a community, and as a community engage the world around about us? Now, I am one of those people who found the Trinity can be a helpful framework to triangulate our place in the world and navigate the way to engage the world. The Trinity are a community of persons living in harmony, playing different roles in the world. So the first person is the God, the initiator, the creator. The second person, God incarnate, the liberator. And the third person is God incognito, the inspirator. And my suggestion is that triangulation is the division of a surface into a set of triangles, and we can use the triangulation of a surface for navigation, like the GPS does for working out where and how to navigate our vehicles on the streets. Now, I believe we can use the three persons in the Trinity as three points to triangulate our place in the world and navigate the way that we can engage the world from where we are right now. Now, that sounds a little weird, I know. Hang in there. I think as we work this out, it'll go from weird to wow. This makes sense, hopefully. The parts of each of the three persons in the Trinity play, and the points of departure for the parts we can play, include the first person and the first point of departure, which is God, the initiator, and the law of God that is written on our hearts. The second person and the second point of departure is God, the liberator, and the blessed revolution that Jesus brings. And the third person and point of departure is God, the inspirator, and the spirit of passion and compassion. What I'm suggesting is each of these provide a way of connecting with God and connecting with God's will in our lives. And when we get all those together, they will actually point us in the direction of where we are located and where we can go from there. Let's look at the first triangulation point, the law of love written on our hearts. So if we're going to engage the world, I'm suggesting that the first point from which we triangulate ourselves is from our Creator, in whose image we are made, and the law of love written on our hearts. The scripture says God created humankind in his own image, and in the image of God he created them, male and female. And at least a part of who we're made to be in the image of God is a being with the law of God written on our hearts. People show that requirements of the law are written on their hearts, their consciences also bearing witnesses, and their thoughts sometimes accusing them and other times defending them. What is clear is that every man and every woman who comes into this world has the law of God written on their hearts. And so the first point of departure for engaging our world is to work out of the sense of who we are made to be as human beings, made in the image of God, with the law of God written on our hearts. And if we're to summarise the law of God that's written on our hearts, it's the law of love. And every religious tradition has some way of representing that in their sacred writings, that we're all called to love our neighbour as ourselves. Right? And if we're going to think of how do we engage each other, how do we engage the world around about us, this is the first point of departure. That we are to engage the world around about us from this point, that we are made in the image of God and the law of God is written on our hearts, and that law is simply this, to love our neighbour as ourselves. That is the principle. That is the modus operandi. That's our point of departure. That's how we're meant to operate in the world around about us, by loving our neighbour as ourselves. Thus, we all know there are no shortcuts, there are no quick fixes, and we can only engage the world around us well by doing unto others as we'd have them do unto us. Notice that's not what has become our modus operandi in our culture, which is doing unto others what they have done to us, right? They bomb us, we bomb them, right? This is a revolutionary way of operating, which actually says, no, we treat other people the way we would like to be treated, not the way we have been treated. That's the call on our hearts. And I know from many conversations with people in Mount Hawthorne Community Church, this is a way of working with each other that inspires you and that actually provides a fundamental principle for the way that you operate. You want to relate to one another and to those around about you in a way that treats other people the way that you would like to be treated. So I think we need to keep that clear in our mind. That's at the point of departure. That informs the way we approach these conversations. That's of first importance. The second point of triangulation is the blessed revolution of Jesus. The second point from which we triangulate ourselves is the liberator and the blessed personal political revolution that Jesus, the liberator, brings us to. And Jesus tells us, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the pure in heart, blessed are the peacemakers, and blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. And as a specifically Christian community, we've not only got the law of God written on our hearts, we've got the life of Christ as the role model for us. And we seek to engage the world in a way that reflects our understanding of the call to love our neighbour as ourselves as it was embodied in Jesus. So the second point for triangulation is the blessed revolution of Jesus. And it's clear that Jesus calls us to practice humility and focus on the poor, not status and riches. Empathy and grieve over injustice in the world. Self-restraint and get angry but never get aggressive. Righteousness and seek for justice, not vengeance. Mercy and extend compassion to all those in need. Integrity and to try to be wholehearted in doing right. Non-violence and work for peace in a world at war. And perseverance, suffering for just causes patiently. So what happens is that we've got this sense of, like all men and women, we're made in the image of God and we're called to love our neighbour as ourselves. And then that intersects with this specificity, this particularity of the gospel as it's embodied in Jesus, who actually says, well, if you want to love your neighbour as yourself in a world where there's poverty and violence, then it means you need to practice this in very specific, particular ways. You need to act with humility, empathy, self-restraint, righteousness, mercy, integrity, non-violence and perseverance. Can you see that? With the way those things come together and give greater clarity as to how we're to operate. Because ultimately, the question is not what do you do next, but who are you going to become? Do you understand that? And what you do next actually is meant to flow out of who you want to become in this context. And what I'm saying is that the two points of triangulation that we've looked at is being a man or a woman made in the image of God, called to love your neighbour as yourself, And then as a follower of Jesus, seeking to follow the way of Christ, the blessed revolution of Jesus, the eightfold path of Jesus in the Beatitudes, and allow that to characterize the way that you engage each other and the people around about us. Does that make sense? Do people understand that? Okay. Now, the third point of triangulation is triangulation with the spirit of passion and compassion. Now, the third point from which we triangulate ourselves is the inspirator, the spirit of passion and compassion. Now, it's my view that when we turn to the Trinity, we usually connect with the first or second persons, with the creator or the liberator, but not the third, because the Father provides a set of rules that are easy to use as guidelines, and the Son sets a perfect example as a guide. But the Spirit seems a bit vague, enigmatic, mysterious. I actually said before that the first person of the Trinity is God the initiator, the second person is God the incarnate, and the third person is God the incognito. The very definition of God in those kind of terms mean you can't see or hear who this is. Did you understand that? The Spirit seems vague, enigmatic, and mysterious. And so we tend to emphasize, in discerning our way forward, we're made in the image of God, we've got to act according to the law of love, we're specifically followers of Jesus, who embodies that in a particularly radical way, and we need to actually live that out in terms of the Beatitudes. But we're not so sure what this means in terms of the Spirit. You know, seems a little bit diffuse, a little bit vague, a little bit strange, a little bit maybe even a bit spooky. What sense do we make of triangulating with the Spirit? Now, so often we resist that. I mean, once we've got a good idea and we've got the funding for it, we do it. We don't wait for the Spirit. Do you understand? We just get on with it. When in fact Jesus says, when it comes to engaging the world, the Spirit is so important we shouldn't proceed without it. Jesus says to his disciples, do not move without it, but wait for the Spirit. Now isn't that interesting? Jesus seems to be saying we need to triangulate with the Spirit too. It's not enough to have the law of God written on our hearts, to love our neighbour as ourselves as a guideline. It's not enough to actually follow in the footsteps of Jesus, seeking to live out the Beatitudes in our life to shape the character of our specific response to a situation. We've got to be sensitive to the Spirit somehow. Discern what the Spirit is on about, how the Spirit is leading us in this situation, to triangulate our engagement with the world. Now, who is the Spirit? Well, we read Genesis chapter 1 and answer the question, who is the Spirit? It says this: in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters, brooding. Now notice this, the Spirit precedes and exceeds a reductionist post-conversion Christian experience. In other words, many of us have been brought up to believe the place of the Spirit is in a post-conversion Christian experience. You're born again of the Spirit. You're baptized in the Spirit. You're filled in the Spirit. You have the gifts of the Spirit. All these are post-conversion Christian experiences. Did you understand that? What I'm saying? When in fact, if you read the Scriptures, the Spirit is the one engaged in the creation of the world, kind of hovering over the chaos, bringing order out of chaos. Do you understand? The role of the Spirit envisaged in Genesis is not that reductionist view of the specifically religious responsibilities of the Spirit. You've got the Spirit who is engaged in mysterious ways in the world around about us, bringing order out of chaos, inspiring the creative process from the start. The Hebrew ruach and the Greek pneuma refer to the spirit as wind or breath, conveying the idea the spirit is as essential as the significance of the very next breath we take. We may not see it, we may not hear it, but we're dead without it. You know, the spirit is the one that brings life, energizes, animates. So it's not just good enough to plan in the light of being made in the image of God with a bit of an understanding of the example of Christ, unless there's energy there, animation there, excitement there, enthusiasm there, it ain't going to happen. Do you understand? And what I'm saying today is, I really believe it's around that area that the challenge for us is in this church, and for most churches, to discern where is the Spirit active? What is the Spirit energizing? Where is the enthusiasm erupting? How can we recognize that? How can we honor that, celebrate that, collaborate with that? Because it's where that is going to happen that will take us into the future that we're called to live out. What role does the Spirit play in the world? Well, through the Spirit, God energizes us. The fact that our English word enthusiasm comes from the Greek entheos, or in God, which would suggest that if we want to maintain our enthusiasm, then we need to be filled with the Spirit. The Spirit enhances our vitality, our sensitivity, our responsibility, so that we have the power to struggle for real personal, social, and political change. And what are the indicators of the presence of the Spirit? Well, I think if we look in Galatians chapter 5, verse 22 to 23, it says, the indicators of the presence of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against these things, there is no law. So what I'm saying is this. The signs of the Spirit at work are in the fruit of the Spirit. At a personal level, there'll be love or passion and compassion. Joy, awareness and appreciation. Peace, trust and tranquility. At a relational level, there'll be patience and persistence. Kindness and sweetness, not bitterness. At a social level, there'll be goodness and generosity, faithfulness and fidelity. And at a political level, there'll be tolerance and non-violence, and self-control and self-management. And what I'm saying is this. Our role is to recognize we're not only made in the image of God, called to follow Jesus, but Jesus calls us to discern the presence of the Spirit. And wherever there is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, tolerance and self-control, wherever these things are happening, they're signs for us that the Spirit is at work. And we need to recognize that and recognize the significance of that. We often forget in our efforts to engage the world that the Spirit is already at work, seeking to lead people into truth and bring order through community out of chaos. I believe that every scientific discovery is in response to the promptings of the Spirit. I believe every artistic creation is in response to the promptings of the Spirit. I believe every meaningful conversation is in response to the promptings of the Spirit. But because the Spirit is God incognito, we take it for granted. We don't recognize the significance of what's happening. But when Jesus says the Spirit will lead you into all truth, I believe we need to assume that wherever we go, the Spirit is at work, wanting to lead us into all truth. And our job is to recognize where the Spirit is working, so that we can collaborate with the Spirit. We need to remember that our role is not to generate the work of the Spirit, but to validate it, celebrate it, participate in it, collaborate with it, cooperating with the work of the Spirit that is evident in the love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, tolerance, and self-control in the world around about us. It seems to me that this is the biggest challenge for many of us, to be mindful of the fact that the Spirit is already at work. The Spirit is already at work in us. The Spirit is already at work through us. The challenge for us is to have eyes to see and ears to hear and hearts to recognize the significance of what is happening. Our role is not to generate the work of the Spirit, but to validate it, celebrate it, participate in it, collaborate with it, cooperating with the work of the Spirit that's evident in us and around us. So it's not kind of stepping back and making these grand plans based on our vision for the world. It's actually coming close, looking around, listening, observing. So where's the energy? Where's the vitality? Where's the sensitivity? Where's the love? Where's the joy? Where's the peace? Where's that erupting? And how can we actually organize around that to support that, to sustain it? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not like you've got to get a committee together to work out what's going to be done. It's happening. It's already happening because the Spirit is already at work. The question is, what is it that is happening? We've got to see it, we've got to hear it, recognize the significance of it. It seems to me that in navigating your way forward, Mount Hawthorn Community Church have connected well to the first person, the Creator, and to the first point of departure, the law of love written on your hearts, and the second person, the Liberator, and the second point of departure, the blessed revolution of Jesus. The challenge is to connect well with the third person, the Inspirator, and the third point of departure, the Spirit of passion and compassion, as it seeks to bring direction out of confusion in your community. Now, if that's true, and I'd like to suggest it is, I think these are the questions we need to ask ourselves. And maybe these are the questions that need to frame our conversations over the next week. So the first is, what is the Spirit doing in our community? Now, remember, when you're looking for that, you're not looking for big indicators of major things. You're looking for little indicators of love, joy, peace, patience. Do you understand? So what is the Spirit doing? Where are the signs of the Spirit evident in the love, joy, peace, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, tolerance, and self-control present in us and happening in us already? The third thing is, in which directions are those signs of the Spirit pointing us as a community? What's happening here? Where's it taking us? And fourthly, and which of those directions that are emerging do we feel most passion and compassion for individually? Not all of us can get involved in all of these things, but there may be something that's emerging, something that's bubbling, something that's erupting, something that's of interest to you, of concern to you, that's something you feel very strongly about, that's for you to take some responsibility in, for you to take some action on. It's not about imposing that on other people and developing it in a program that everybody has to subscribe to. Do you understand? It's about saying, hey, I'm concerned about supporting people with elderly parents, you know? That's been mentioned today. How can we find ways to be more supportive? Other people might be saying, I'm more concerned about how we can actually help with the younger people who are exploring ways of engaging the world as young adults. You know, maybe there's a conversation around that because I'm concerned about that. It's not about everybody being subjected to a program that's imposed on everybody. It's about all of us being sensitive to the issues that concern us. That we are energized by and we want to talk about. So, I believe we can begin to discern the answers to these questions by considering what we really care about ourselves. What is something that we want to do something about? We need to identify it, name it, and own it ourselves. By extending an invitation to anyone who cares may include malcontents, but malcontents rarely stay with the program, so make it an open invitation, let anybody come. Those who aren't really committed to will kind of drop off, and you'll be left with the people who are really committed to work it through. By inviting those who attend to come into the circle. Open the circle for all to participate in. Hold the circle open for genuine mutual conversation. Not dominating one another, but kind of helping each other understand. Welcoming a sense of passion and responsibility. For me, passion and compassion are signs of the Spirit, and the Spirit manifests itself in responsibility. Let's have conversations about what we care about, what's important to us, what we're passionate about, what we share passion about, that we're prepared to do something about ourselves, take some action on. We can do this by hosting multiple conversations about the issues arising. In fact, that's what we want to do in a few minutes. We want to give people the opportunity to host conversations about things that you care about, things that are important to you. You can divide into small groups. We'll have the opportunity for multiple small groups to talk about the things that you'd like to talk about. We could then, as a result of our conversations, then give that feedback to the large group, and Michael will be taking some of that feedback and putting that into a book of records. We need to observe people's right to come and go as they please. The right people will come. It starts when it starts. It ends when it ends. And what happens, happens. We don't have to get everybody to recruit people along to our group. Just invite people to have a conversation. If people turn up, they turn up. If they don't, they don't. That's okay. If no one else is as interested as you are about something, then obviously there's not enough energy to make it happen yet. You need to keep thinking about it, talking about it, and praying about it until there's critical mass of interest. Right? It's not about offering promised rewards or threatening sanctions to get people to do what you want to do. The question is, where is the energy? Where's the interest? Raise the issue, see who comes, sees who's part of the conversation, and if there's enough people with enough interest, then you've got some energy to take it through. What happens, happens. If nothing happens in that regard, then it's not the time for that to happen. You need to wait until it is. Then you have a conversation until some clarity emerges from the chaos. If an action is clear, then you decide to do something about it. If it's not, you keep thinking until something is clear. And then you just need to structure around that activity. In a minimal way, not to control it, but just to support it. That way, I think, we can triangulate what we're doing. We can operate in relation to God, in whose image we are made, who calls us to love our neighbour as ourselves. We can operate particularly with a concern to act in a way that's true to the character of Jesus and embody the Beatitudes that he incarnated in his life. And we can discern together what that means here and now by discerning where the energy and the interest is in the group. All right. Is there any questions about that before we move that on to open up this into a conversation? Does it? Yes. Yeah, well, see, it depends on your view of the Trinity, of course. There are some people that just see the Trinity as three ways that the one God engages the world, and that is a descriptor of one of the ways that God engages the world. And there are other people who see the Trinity as three persons who play complementary roles. So it depends on your view of what the Trinity is, how you would make sense of that. You know, so my own view is that there are three persons in complementary relationships, and they play different roles. And that the challenge for many of us is to find a way of relating to the third person of the Trinity, the Spirit, who is acting like that to in every situation, like hovering over the chaos of this community gathering, trying to draw something out of it, kind of bring something out of it. And none of us can see the Spirit here, none of us can hear it. It's all kind of mysterious kind of stuff. But I believe Jesus says the Spirit will lead you into all truth, and I believe that the Spirit is already active in this place and has been already active in a lot of your conversations. And the question is for us is to be more attentive, more aware. And that's why I'm saying the indicators are good for that, because the Spirit is like the wind. You can't see it. You can only see the impact of it. And that's where the indicators of the Spirit are so important for discerning where the Spirit is. Love, joy, peace, patience, and so on. They're the key performance indicators of the Spirit, if you like. You know, ways of identifying where the Spirit is at work. And I think if we want to know where we proceed, we need to look for those signs in any conversations, because they are signs that they're inspired, spirited, whatever language you want to use. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Yes.
What do you think of, or the experience of, the idea of, you know, not feeling like you've got to move to something, but just creating the space so that things can happen? Like, you know, we're so driven a lot of the time, the idea of doing nothing. A friend of mine said to me last week, don't just do something, stand there. Sometimes when you're doing something that's not filling your life and not purposeful, but you're busy and you have to do it, you kind of have to stop that first and then see what. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the point is.
Not right
no. The point is that sometimes we're too busy to discern the presence of the Spirit, and we actually have to slow down and stop before we can see, before we can hear, before we can discern that.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
The first step
that's
is
right.
getting rid of the dead stuff that's filling up your life.
Yeah, that's right.
And then see what happens rather than looking for something to replace it before you remove it.
Well, so, for example, we're going to invite you to host a conversation. And we've got the pieces of paper under there, under the table. Oh, there they are. Yeah, that's fine. And we're going to invite you to host a conversation. Now, notice that between now and the time we're meant to close, there's an opportunity for six conversations for half an hour, and then another six conversations for half an hour. So there's room for 12 conversations. That's lots of options. And we're going to invite you to think of what would you like to talk about. I mean, for example, you may want to host a conversation around how can we create enough stillness to discern where we go next. Do you know what I mean? That may be the conversation you want to host. And if so, what I'm going to ask you to do is put your name up there and the topic up there and put it in one of these sections. Now, it can either be in the first half hour and the second half hour. And as Michael is going to point out, there are six places where you can hold the conversation.
One in that room there, two in that room there, three in that corner there, four in this corner here, five out the door, six in
that corner. Do you understand that? So this is not where anybody imposes on you what you should talk about. This is a space where you decide the conversation that you would like to have around something that you are concerned about, something that's of importance to you, something you're passionate about. You know how in church groups, there's always these conversations about we should really do this, or we should really do that, or why don't they do this and why don't they do that? Well, this is the opportunity for you to host a conversation around stuff that you are really passionate about. And then to write your name, the topic on here, and then locate it in the particular time and place slot. Okay?
And before you stick it up here, go to the microphone and announce it.
Okay? So in a moment, we're going to give you the opportunity to take one of these, host those conversations. Now, in this process today, there are a number of kind of principles and laws. So first of all, there are these principles over here. We want you to notice. The right people will come. It starts when it starts. It ends when it ends. What happens, happens. So you may host a conversation and lots of people come, and it just happens and it rolls on. And in fact, you may roll on your conversation right through the afternoon. You may not be able to stop and go to another conversation because it's too important. In fact, you may decide that you want to continue this conversation through the week. And you as a group decide, let's meet again at a particular time and place during the week to further this conversation in order to discern what we do about this next. Do you understand that? On the other hand, you may host a conversation like I did the other week at an open space conversation, and no one turned up. Now, the important thing is, don't feel that this is a rejection. This is not a popularity contest. This is about discernment where the spirit is. It just may be that the issue you have raised may be an important one, but not one that other people can relate to at this particular time and place. That's okay. If no one turns up at your conversation, just let it go and you can sit there and have a time of quiet. Or you may decide to go to somebody else's conversation. Do you understand what I'm saying? In fact, open space conversation, there's the law of 2 feet, which means at any time you can move from a conversation to another conversation. If you find this is not something that's grabbing your attention, not something you can engage with significantly, don't feel duty bound to be present, to stay there, to make people feel good. Right? Go where the energy is. You're trying to discern where the energy is, how you can be engaged. If you don't have enough, if you're too bored to even stick with the conversation, you're not going to stick with the program. Hey, there's no point developing a program out of it because you don't have the energy to make it happen. Go where the energy is, go where the interest is, go where the passion is, go where the responsibility is, go with something that you really care about, right? I mean, I've been involved in conversations that I've started before that I got bored with and had to move on to somebody else's conversation. But that's okay. Do you understand that? Because this is a process of discernment. Where is the spirit working? Where is the energy? Where is the enthusiasm? And allow those conversations to bubble up, right? And in the process of those conversations, we're going to ask you to talk about the question you're concerned about. And just consider whether there's any action you want to take, either individually or as a group. We're going to give you a form that you can fill in that will actually document your conversations. And then, yep.
If you convene a conversation, what we're asking you to do is to start the conversation, be there to start it, and make sure that somebody, if you want notes taken and put in the thing, that you or somebody else in the group take some brief notes, not the book, take brief notes, follow the headings, topic, who convened it, who's there, your brief notes. I'll repeat this. Dot points are fine, and that somebody in the group will agree to type those up and send them to me by Wednesday, but I'll say that again. So, my commitment is any notes that are taken, that are typed up and sent to me, will come out as a book of reading, so I'll have a record of everything that's there. I'll say that before the end.
Is that clear? Over here.
So you'll find in the circles a clipboard, pen and paper in all circles.
Over here there's a little statement here about butterflies and bumblebees. That's actually framing what I was saying before about the law of 2 feet, being free to move like butterflies and bumblebees. Some of you can flitter from group to group if you like, just checking things out. Others of you can be like bumblebees, cross-pollinating ideas. Do you understand what I'm saying? So this is... Do you understand that this is an open, experimental space? Go where the energy is, go where the interests, because we want to discern where the spirit is going, where the spirit is taking us, what is inspired, what has energy and enthusiasm behind it that can take you forward as a community. Last but not least, it says, be prepared to be surprised. this session may have sounded a little crazy, a little wacky, a little weird. What we're going to do now in terms of this open conversation where it's not organised, but you organise it yourself, may sound a little strange. But be prepared to be surprised. Something may happen this afternoon. Some interests may emerge. Some directions may emerge out of this that will give you a sense of where you want to grow individually or collectively as a group. Okay? So what we're going to do now is open it up to you. Invite you over the next few minutes to take a piece of paper, to write your name and the topic, come to the microphone and say, "My name is so-and-so, I'd like to host a conversation on this topic." That doesn't mean you're to be an expert, you don't have to give a presentation, you may want to ask a question, have no idea of what the answer is, that's okay. You just host the conversation, say, "Anybody wants to talk about this, join me, and I will be talking, hosting this conversation at this time, at this place." And then you go to that place and wait to see anybody, if anybody turns up. If they do, there's some energy around that and you take it forward. Okay?
Final thing, nobody's going to tell you it's time. That's self-organising. Keep an eye on the time and start the conversation at the time it's set.
However, at 2:45, we will alert you to regather as a group so we can have some feedback.